Well, we're going to finish or conclude commentary. Well, I don't know if we're going to finish. Commentary on the series of verses that starts with text 15 and it goes to text 20. And in those texts, Narada is foretelling in his conversation with Krishna his next set of pastimes, the killing of the demon pastimes. And in the course of that, we read, I'm going to revisit something from yesterday because it was a lively discussion and it sparked my curiosity to research it further and so forth. So text 14 reads, part of the translation, the horse demon was so terrifying that his neighing frightened the demigods into leaving their heavenly kingdom. But our good fortune, by our good fortune, you have enjoyed the sport of killing him. Now, we'll go to the Sanskrit of the verse. It's Hayakriti, Hayakriti, like Hayagriva or Hayashirsha. Haya indicates horse, having the form of a horse. Yasya, whose, Heshita, is neighing, loud sound of a horse. And Santrashta means terrified. And then Chajanti, they abandoned. And then the word for the demigods isn't the usual word for demigods, it's Animisha. But it's the indication it's the demigods because they left Divam. They left heaven. They abandoned heaven out of fear, terror, terrified. That's Santrashta. They weren't just afraid, they were terrified by the terrorist, Keshi, because the sound was so frightening. So we spent some time discussing Sanatan Goswami's commentary, where he gives two different meanings, possible meanings, of Animesha. Both is referring to the demigods, but the demigods are, it's Animesha. So the devatas were in terror just because of his neighing, although they are free of fear of time. So why was the word Animesha used instead of Deva? Maybe it had three syllables instead of two. Oh, four syllables. It fit the meter better. But why Animesha? How does it work? So, Nimesha, I spent some time, so I'm just sharing with you some research. In the, if you want to take note of the verse from Canto 3, the calculation of time by the atom, I didn't identify the verse, but there's a chart, a table of time from that canto, that chapter of third canto, where the smallest unit of time is one truti. It's the time it takes for the sun to cross one atom. And then so many atoms, 100 atoms makes one more Vedha, Lava, nimesha, and then kshana. So we'll go start with kshana. Kshana is 8/5 of a second. So it's almost 1.5 seconds. And kshana is translated sometimes as a moment. And it takes 3 nimeshas to make 1 kshana, and nimeshas often translated as blink. So you can blink 3 times. It makes a moment. So nimesha is a unit of time, a very small unit of time. So, and animesha is they don't blink even for a moment they were. So that's the other explanation Sanatana Goswami gives. Or, fearing his coming, the devatas always glanced here and there with unblinking eyes. Animesha. But nimesha is a small unit of time, and animesha means no passage of time. Specifically says they have no fear of time, but they had no sense of passage of time, because passage of time destroys, and they have no fear. They have no sense of passage of time, no fear of time. There's a reference in the 10th canto of the gopis criticizing Brahma because Brahma made eyes that nimesha, they blink. It's about 0.5 seconds, less than 0.5 seconds. Or yugayatam nimeshena. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, same root. For a moment, for 1 nimesha, it seems to be a yuga when there's attachment to Krishna. So that's this nimesha. I'm going to go to another topic that's connected, but because of my reading in Tattva Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami describes, this may be useful for your preaching to people that know about Buddhism. Jiva Goswami describes in Tattva Sandarbha, the second half of Tattva Sandarbha, he, in 2 successive anuchedas, contends with the Buddhist doctrine. He says a sect of Buddhism, but from research, largely, Buddhists hold this doctrine. Kshana Vada Buddhism. Kshana Vada Buddhism says there's nothing except 1 kshana. So be in the moment. Because that's all there is. And there's a doctrine that goes with it. And, the doctrine goes, in Jiva Goswami, it's different, but he treats it this way. Supposing one moment you see something blue. So another moment you see something green. So, is it blue or is it green? Is there greenness or is there blueness? Well, all there is the moment. Doesn't allow for consciousness even. It's just the moment. And Buddhism, strict Buddhism, teaches just be in the moment because that's all there is. And then the goal is to get on the other side of the moment. And that's nirvana. This world in which we live is just a series of moments. There isn't anything that's meaningful or real. All there is the moment. And by the process of meditation on being in the moment, you're in the condition of reality, and then you can go into nirvana. That same word nirvana is used in chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita. The process of meditation that's described there. And interestingly, it's not in the verse, but Prabhupada always, when speaking about that process of meditation, eyes half open, half closed, or the non-blinking. That's the yogi is the non-blinking, and Vishnu is also non-blinking. And if you want to be a really good Buddhist, then you don't blink. You're just in the moment. In Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text 4, at the very after right the three introductory verses, if you remember, the Sanskrit is Naimishe Nimishakshetra. Naimishe refers to the forest of Naimisharanya, and Animisha Kshetra. In Prabhupada's word for word, the spot, this is the meaning of Animisha Kshetra, Kshetre, the spot which is especially a favorite of Vishnu, parentheses, who does not close his eyes. One of the names of Vishnu is Animisha. Vishnu doesn't close his eyes. He glances, but and he's in yoga nidra, but he doesn't close his eyes and sleep, that kind of sleep. But then in the Putana Leela, the opposite is there. He is Nimisha. He closes his eyes. The Sanskrit is Chara Achara Atma. That's the Supersoul. Chara Achara Atma. The soul, the all-pervading Supersoul, within moving and the non-moving, all living entities, Supersoul is there. So he's Vishnu that doesn't close his eyes. But Krishna closed his eyes. He, Nimilita Ikshana. So it's not Nimesha, but it's the same dhatu, the same root. Nimilita. He closed his eyes. Here's the Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, there are two perplexities. When Krishna saw that Putana had come to kill him, he thought that since this woman was present with motherly affection, although artificial, he had to offer her a benediction. Therefore, he looked at her with a little perplexity and then closed his eyes. Putana Rakshasi was also perplexed. She was not intelligent enough to understand that she was taking a sleeping snake on her lap. She thought the snake to be an ordinary rope. The two words, antakam and anantam, this is Prabhupada's purport, are contradictory. Antakam means the source of annihilation. And antakam means eternal. So she'd come to kill he who's ananta, but he's actually anantakam. So that's the contradiction, the rope and the snake. Because of not being intelligent, Putana thought that she could kill her antakam, the source of her annihilation. But because he was ananta, unlimited, no one can kill him. So back to the text 14. The demigods by Shukadeva Goswami are being identified as Animisha. It doesn't say Deva, it says Animisha Divam. Chajanti Animisha Divam. They were terrified, and so they were abandoning their heavenly abode. Who? The Animisha folks. So, those who don't blink, they were looking here and there with fear and left out of fear, terror. But the other is connected to this unit of time, animisha. So again, it's from Canto 3, the calculation of time. It's 1/15th of a second. It's slightly more than half a second. And that's the duration of a blink. So they're likened to Vishnu, who is animisha, but here Sukadeva chooses to call them animisha. So that's why Sanatana Goswami expressed that's a legitimate reading. So moving on, that was just sharing something. Carrying on to chapter 37, text 15 through 20. Here's Sanatana Goswami's commentary. This is, that long set of verses where Narada speaking to Krishna in Braja, indicating what's next in the sequence of his pastimes. His commentary reads, the word cha indicates that for certain all of the demons would be killed. I will see them all killed. This indicates his skill in revealing knowledge. Though two other wrestlers, Shala and Toshaka, were also killed, the plural is used, anyan, since killing the chief wrestlers, all other were equivalent to being dead. So he doesn't mention their name and he's saying why. It's that he's just saying cha or anya, the plural. Question, how can all of them be killed at once? Answer, O Lord, you are capable of doing everything. Prabhu, why must this be done so quickly? O Lord, you are the Lord of the Yadus. You must do this to help the devotees. The list of demons killed is not given in chronological order. They are listed only to ask for the Lord's assistance. I will see others like Mura killed also. I will see you marry the daughters of Kshatriyas or the daughters of heroes among the Kshatriyas. Vira Kanyanam. Oh, hero, Vira, you will marry daughters because of your heroism. Thus, you pay a dowry of defeating and stealing away with a show of valor. Via Shukla. Adi indicates that some, such as the wives of Kaliya, simply offered themselves with bhakti. You will free Nriga from his sin when he unknowingly took cows from a brahmana. This happened near Dwaraka, where the lizard had fallen in the well and was saved by Krishna, who came out of the city to rescue him. O Lord of the universe, you show your powers, such as riding on Garuda, when Indra comes there. Seeing the form of the Lord, when he went to Mahakalapur, the Brahmana attained liberation. This is described in Bhagavatamrita. He will also be described in the later text. So from Bhagavatamrita, I wanted to find out, where is that? Because this is Sanatana Goswami's commentary. He knows what's in Brihat Bhagavatamrita. And this is Gopakumar being spoken to before he enters Mahakalapur. So he's describing his journey before he gets there. By crossing those shells, coverings of the universe, one reaches the abode of Mahakala, the imperishable abode where material existence disappears. It is called Mahakalapur because there all material causes and effects are non-existent. So it's a little confusing unless you read carefully, and even then it's like you have to read really carefully. Mahakalapur is used in a number of different ways to indicate a number of different realms. One of those is the abode of Varuna, is also called Mahakala. It's called different things. Anyway, with some help from Antardweep, the devotee in charge of the TOVP, I spent a fair amount of time back and forth researching where is the abode of Yamaraj. And there's four different abodes of Yamaraj. I'll just say them quickly, but there's details. One is at the top of Mount Sumeru, there's the abode of Brahma, one of his like summer homes or something. And then in the eight directions, there's demigods in charge of the directions. And one of those is the abode of Yamaraj. That's one of them. Then in the perimeter, one of the islands, the sun, the movement of the sun is on Plakshadweep, and then there's Mount, what's the name of the mountain? It moves in a circular motion around that mountain, Plakshadweep. And in the four directions, there are abodes so that the sun passes through those, and one of those is one of the abodes of Varuna. So he has a heavenly, he has a heavenly abode, and he has one of these where the sun moves, and then he has an abode that's, he's in charge of, the presiding deity of Pitruloka. And Pitruloka is at the very bottom of the universal structure, but above hells. So the seven lower planetary systems are not hells, they're just lower planetary systems. And at the bottom, very bottom, just above the Garbhadak Ocean, is where Pitruloka is. But Pitruloka is a place where pious people go. And it's, so that's interesting. There's more details. And then below that is another place where Yamaraj resides, and that's the hells. The Bhagavatam describes some number of them, whatever the number is, 20-something. And then it says, Shukadeva Goswami says, it's actually unlimited. But it occupies only a very, very tiny portion spatially for the structure of the universe. And it's just above the Garbhadak Ocean. And above that is Pitruloka. And then back up in Bhumandala, there's the circular motion that the sun follows. And one of those cardinal directions is abode of Yamaraj. And then at the top of Mount Sumeru is another abode of... So he has lots of abodes. And one of the references here, and reason going into this is, Mahakala is indicated one of the places that's being referred to in these pastimes. Mahakala literally means great time. So I'll just read the purport. Commentary from the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Mahakalapur, famous as the place to which Krishna and Arjuna made their way to receive the sons, plural, the sons of the Dwarka Brahmana, is the location and the essential identity of Nirvana. So what's beyond one nimesha? Because that's within this realm. It's the sun moving over atoms, is Nirvana. The goal for Buddhism is to go to beyond time. And that abode is Mahakalapur, according to Brihat Bhagavatamrita, the essential identity of Nirvana. Or Sayujya, the liberation, becoming one with the Supreme. Of course, Sanatana Goswami writes, from the absolute point of view, liberation is not confined to some specific location. Nonetheless, the spatial terms, in spatial terms, it is conceived as being outside the coverings of the material cosmos. In other words, you can be liberated in this world and you don't have to like go beyond the coverings of the universe. It's consciousness, it's not spatial. But there is a place, Mahakalapur. And then he concludes, this same conception should be applied to the various spiritual locations Gopa Kumar will visit later. So Mahakalapur is, you can say, the Brahmajyoti and all the other places where he goes. They're all Mahakalapur. So it includes the abode of Vishnu, or Mahavishnu, where Arjuna and Krishna went to get the sons of the Brahmana from Dwarka. And then the final paragraph here in this commentary. The material creation, that's where we have nimeshas and kshanas and things like that, time, material time, the sun passing over atoms. The material creation consists of gross and subtle causes called karyas, such as the five basic elements and gross and subtle products called karanas, like the bodies and senses of the living entities. In the realm of Mahakalapur, these karyas and karanas are not to be found. So that's like one of the aspirations of Buddhism. Well, it's, you know, those that want Sayujya Mukti, and then beyond Sayujya Mukti is the other forms of liberation. But it's all in the Mahakalapur, where there's no material, gross or subtle causes or effects. And that plays into, there's, for the residents of Vrindavan, this question you were speaking of yesterday evening. They don't even perceive material tribulation. They perceive something. So now back to Sanatana Goswami's commentary on these verses. Later, after the killing of Pondraka, Shishupal would be killed at Yudhisthira's sacrifice. These astonishing activities will be suitable to sing, or will be sung by Vyasa and others. Bhagavatam. I will see activities like simultaneously you're marrying many wives and giving mercy to Sridham. Oh, best of, so this is now a reference to 11th canto, chapter 2, text 1. It's going to be spoken of in the next commentary also. Oh, best of the Kurus, eager to engage in the worship of Krishna, Narada Muni stayed constantly in Dwarka, which was always protected by the arms of Govinda. Cool. So how long did, I mean, I without before reading this, how long did Narada stay? Well, he visited and then he did the Narada. He went somewhere else. Eager to engage in the worship of Krishna, Narada Muni stayed constantly in Dwarka, which was always protected by the arms of Govinda. Oh, alas, I am so fortunate to see this. And this is the greatness of your mercy. So this is Narada to Krishna, concluding that section of verses. It hasn't happened yet, but he is like, he's seeing it. And he's saying it to inspire Krishna to go do it. To leave Braja and go to the next chapter of, sequel of his pastimes. So now here's Vishwanath's commentary. Narada said, quote, I know the sequence of your pastimes, having already seen them in your various previous descents. Now that a different reason why he could see it, but that's okay. This is only an outline of your future pastimes and is not intended to be a comprehensive account. I will see you kill the Panchajanya or Shankha demon. I will watch you retrieve the Shamataka jewel along with your wife Jambavati, and you will deliver a Brahmana's son from the abode of Yamaraj. So what's all that about? Sounds, when I was reading this, I got confused. So I looked it up. You know, he goes to the Mahakalapurt to retrieve the sons of the Brahmana in Dwarka, and it's sons plural. And here it's son singular, and he's going to the abode of Yamaraj. So let's hear. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 7, Text number 6, 1176, and it's the very, very beginning of Uddhava Gita, which I plan to get to next, Uddhava Gita, in the evening session. So, Krishna speaking to Uddhava, preparing Uddhava for his departure, he says, now you should completely give up all attachment to your personal friends and relatives and fix your mind on me. It does not say, like, leave them. It says, give up attachment and fix your mind on me. Thus, being always conscious of me, you should observe all things with equal vision and wander throughout the earth. He's giving, like, very explicit instruction. There's really nice commentary on equal vision, you know, that Bhagavad Gita and then Srimad Bhagavatam, equal vision, Bhagavad Gita, and Bhagavatam, equal vision. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on this verse, 11.7.6, as follows. At the end of his manifest pastimes on earth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, thought as follows within his mind. Now, how would you like to be able to read Krishna's mind? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has the capacity of Krishna revealing his mind. He didn't say, he's just disclosing his mind. And he's writing, during my pastimes on earth, I have satisfied the desires of all those devotees who anxiously desire to see me. I have duly married thousands of queens headed by Rukmini, whom I personally kidnapped, and I have killed innumerable demons in various places and by various means. I have attended meetings, reunions, and ceremonies with many friends, relatives, and well-wishers in cities like Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwarka, Hastinapur, Mithila. And thus, I have kept constantly busy coming and going in the performance of pastimes. I further arranged to give my personal association to great devotees who are situated below the earthly planet, right, visiting Amaraj, to give him his association. In order to please my mother, Devaki, and return her six deceased sons who were killed by Kamsa, I descended to the planet Suttala and blessed my great devotee, Bali Maharaj. In order to return the dead son of my spiritual master, Sandipani Muni, I personally went to the court of Ravinandan, or Yamaraj. And thus he was able to see me face to face. I even blessed the residents of heaven, such as Mother Aditi and Kashyapa Muni, with my personal association when I traveled there to steal the Parijata flower from my wife, Satyabhama. And in order to please the inhabitants of Mahavishnu's abode, such as Nanda Sunanda and Sudarshana, I traveled to Maha Vaikuntha Loka. Doesn't say Mahakalapur, but it's the same. Maha Vaikuntha Loka, to recover the deceased children of a frustrated Brahmana. Thus, innumerable devotees who are ardently desired to see me have received the object of their prayers. Unfortunately, Nara Narayan Rishi and the great Paramahansa sages who live with him in Badrika Ashram, although most enthusiastic to see me, never had their desire fulfilled. I have been on earth for 125 years, and the scheduled time is now up. Being busily engaged in my pastimes, I did not have time to give my blessings to these great sages. Nevertheless, Uddhava is practically the same as me. He is a great devotee and shares my own transcendental opulences. Thus, he is the right person for me to send to Badrika Ashram. I shall give Uddhava complete transcendental knowledge by which one becomes detached from the material world, and he in turn can deliver this knowledge, the science of transcending the kingdom of illusion, to the worthy sages at Badrika Ashram. In this way, he can teach them the method of rendering loving devotional service to my lotus feet. Such loving devotional service rendered to me is the most valuable treasure, and by hearing such knowledge, the desires of the great sages, such as Nara Narayana, will be completely fulfilled. Paragraph. Those great souls who have surrendered unto me are always equipped with transcendental knowledge and detachment from the material world. Sometimes, being busy in their devotional service, they may appear to forget me. However, a pure devotee who has achieved the platform of love for me will always be protected by such sincere devotion. Even if such a devotee should suddenly give up his life while neglecting to fix his mind intensely on me, such a devotee's loving feelings are so powerful that they afford him all protection. Even if there is a temporary moment, kshana, of forgetfulness, such devotion will bring the devotee to my lotus feet, which are beyond the vision of ordinary materialistic persons. Uddhava is my pure devotee. Knowledge of me and detachment from this world have again been aroused in him because he can never give up my association. So I thought to read that because it's for two reasons. It's similar to what Narada is saying. It's just like a recounting of Krishna's pastimes. This is in retrospect, and Narada's in going forward in time. But it also explains this, what to me was at least a mystery of Mahakalapur and delivering a Brahmana son and delivering a Brahmana's sons. And so it's just two different pastimes of Krishna, in his estimation, giving association. We hear that's why the Brahmanas in Dwarka, the Brahmana's sons, were taken by Mahavishnu because he wanted Krishna's association. So he knew how to get Krishna's association. And that's why Arjuna couldn't stop because it was Mahavishnu who was taking the children. And why the Brahmana from within his heart was criticizing Krishna or Ugrasena and Krishna. What kind of government is this? So the Lord of the heart, the Antar Atma, the Supersoul, or Chara Achara Atma, he did what he did and inspired the Brahmana in Dwarka to do what he did so that Krishna could get Krishna's association. But Krishna wanted to give. It's all a grand orchestration. So if you don't like Krishna's plan, too bad. Because that's reality. Krishna's plan is reality. And anything else is not reality. Even this nirvana place. Even where time doesn't move and Kari and Karna doesn't act, it's still minus the sense of connection with the personality of Godhead. So like, you know, why did Buddha teach this anyways? Because it's like cutting people short. And he is an incarnation, right? So why did he teach all this stuff? Because the people of the time, people wanted it. Why does God create the material world where people suffer? Because people wanted it. It gave them an upgrade from being captured by illusion. But one can't stay there. There's some detailed research that was done by Chandrasekhar Prabhu about, because in China, Buddhism is big, so is there a planet where worshippers of Buddha go? And where is it? And there's different brands of Buddhism. So it's like, there's not like one answer. This is just sharing. It's not exactly on topic, but Amitabha Buddha group, which is the largest group in mainland China today, they have the following teaching. Amitabha Buddha, one of the Buddhas, he had compassion. And he realized most Buddhists aren't going to make it to the Nirvana place. And so he created a place for them. The land of pure bliss. And it sounds like a heavenly planet. Long duration of life, great opulence, etc., etc. And it's the really fortunate ones get to continue and get trained up how to go to the Nirvana place. But otherwise they go and stay for a long time and enjoy. That's not what the original Buddha taught. An original Buddha taught, you go to the Nirvana place. But those that become Buddhist according to what the original Buddha taught, or that the Amitabha Buddha, and there's a mantra, they chant his name, Amitabha Buddha, it's part of the sadhana. If they go to, you know, and you're there and he's there, and he teaches you, if you want, to, you know, enjoy, or teaches you how to go beyond. If you're really fortunate. If you're like a really good monk or something. So, Prabhupada Sannyas Guru is the only one I could find who gave writings about Buddhism. Keshava Maharaj. And there's not a lot of scriptural reference to draw upon to say something conclusive. So rather than like carry on further with that topic, I can send to whoever sends out these notices, Yasoda Nandana, this research paper that was done by Chandrasekhar Prabhu, knowing that, you know, there'll be people that will have another opinion and criticize whatever you write about anything. But it, you know, it's reasonably well researched, and you can take a look at it. And in Tattva Sandarbha, I can also send that. Jiva Goswami's remarks in Tattva Sandarbha on the Chanak Vada Buddhism. He calls it a sect. Apparently prevalent during his time. Although Shankaracharya drove the Buddhists out, they still were Buddhists. And that's a brand. And if I get more time, I'll complete what a little project I started, is taking that text of Jiva Goswami's Tattva Sandarbha and making it more readable. Like if you're not super scholar, how do you understand what he's writing? So, any discussion? Kurunanidhi.
Maharaj, this calculation, like time calculation, is based on material calculation or celestial? Like
material calculation, or what's the other option?
And or it is celestial. Like
intellectual?
Celestial.
Well, but that's also material. Celestial is material. Celestial is material, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
The time that it takes for the sun to cross the one atom applies in heaven as it does here.
So we can conclude that gopis, when they complain to...
That's consciousness. Yeah. Their consciousness is... It's a yuga. And how long is a yuga? It's long. But it's their consciousness. It's describing their attachment for Krishna is so intense that even if for Nimesha, Yugayitam, Nimeshena, even for that, it seemed like a yuga. Separation. It's the description of the intensity of their love. It's their subjective experience. They're beyond celestial.
Maharaj, I came across somewhere sometimes, if I'm not mistaken, one nimesha is equal to...
One who what?
One nimesha is equal to 1/8 times of second, or 1/8 of second.
What's he saying?
One nimesha is equal to 1/8 of a second.
It's somewhere
it's 5/8. One nimesha. Prabhupada. Just slightly more than a half. 5/8. It's in the, you can look it up. There's a whole chart. Canto 3, the chapter on the calculation of time by the atom, and there's a chart, Prabhupada's chart. Yes?
Guru Maharaj, you were speaking about how liberation is consciousness, it's not spatial.
Yeah.
And yet in Gopakumar's journey, we see he's always hankering for, the abode of Goloka.
Yeah.
So there's something to be said about the abode too, the spatial experience.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something to be said about seeing Krishna's form as opposed to meditating on Krishna's form. There's something different than our experience, consciousness experience, of chanting the holy name and experiencing the form of the holy name. And it's not spatial. But it's a hankering for the form of Krishna. And Krishna recognizes, and Krishna may reveal his form. But it's there. So it's consciousness, not spatial. But we have this conventional way of saying what we say, beyond the coverings of the universe. Then one can be in Krishna consciousness in Chicago or anywhere within the universe. So it's not spatial. The place is Vaikuntha if you're Krishna conscious. Because where Krishna is at the center. Anything else?
I have another question. I found it interesting that when Putana was described and Krishna was saying, her motherly affection, although artificial.
Yes.
So I always assumed that, it was because her motherly affection was genuine. That's why she got to go to Goloka and be Mother Yashoda's servant.
Well, this is your question. It is very similar to the question yesterday about is it this or that. And different acharyas describe differently based upon their realization. Now, was it genuine or was it artificial? And some may read it this way and some may read it that way. And well, if it's this way, then it's not that way. If it's that way, then it's not this way. Which is it? It's the same dilemma. And it's, the realization of the acharya within the frame of the scripture. It's quite okay. In order to go into understandings by various acharyas, one needs to have a frame of reference, a fundamental frame of reference, and that's our founder acharya. Before going into exactly what I'm doing, into different acharya's commentaries, really what should happen is one just reads Prabhupada's books and becomes quite familiar with Prabhupada's books, because you'll hear different things from different, just like, the bhakta in the bhakta program should hear from the bhakta leader. And, your children should hear from mother and father, anyone's children. And after some time, they may hear from someone else. And if they hear something else from someone else, they go back to mother and father, because that's the authority that, is in their heart. It's like that. So maybe I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing, but the devotees seem to like it, and this explanation then becomes required probably multiple times. Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text Number 3, Purport. Prabhupada writes, the serious student would do well to read the commentaries of this and that. It's right in his books. So, before you go into those commentaries, not just read once, but become very conversant in Prabhupada's Bhaktivedanta purports. You have one teacher, our primary Shiksha Guru. And then others, Prabhupada, so even with others, they have a different, a detail of perception, just like you're bringing up here. Was it artificial, or was it genuine? Or genuine plus some other emotion, like, I want to kill him. So mothers don't want to, a genuine mother doesn't want to kill the child. So then it's artificial. But one could say it was a mix. So some say this, some say that. It's Prabhupada's purport is artificial. So, okay, that's it. And everything else is off the table. And any other achari that says anything else, you'll see you later. But that's not how it works. And he also writes, he writes in his teachings that acharis may disagree, it's just fine. It's in Bhaktisiddhanta's writings, they may have difference of opinion, it's fine. It can be in really, you know, specific empiric factual things, not just subtle, intentional, motivational things, empiric things. How many cowherd boys went out with Krishna? Different acharyas say different things. How many calves are there? Different acharyas say different things. Well, if it's this, then it's not that. If it's that, then it's not this. We have that dilemma. There's other examples without... So there has to be some maturity before processing if this is right, then, and I'm at Prabhupada's feet, if it doesn't say what Prabhupada said, it just goes into, you know, a garbage can somewhere. And if that, if one does that, then the whole acharya goes into the garbage can. Because he said something other than what Prabhupada said. There's lots of topics like this. Anyone else? Over here? You normally like sitting in the sun, but you're sitting over there.
It was here originally.
Oh, okay.
So I got a small amount of the sun.
Okay.
And Sharam Paswami, you know, through that very careful breakdown you did of... The different amounts of time.
Yeah.
So, you know, the description of the demigods has been unblinking. It's related both to the terror of the arrival of Keshi, and it's also related to the connection they have with the Lord Vishnu. So, in actual fact, it's that word is used for that reason, and not that they are constantly not having to worry about blinking, correct? The unblinkingness is connected to the event.
I'm missing the point. Could you catch it?
I can try again, Sharon Paswami.
Huh?
I can try again.
Okay, I got the first part. But the crux of your question,
yes,
I missed it.
Yes, I'm wanting to know if that unblinkingness of the demigods is particularly connected to the arrival of Keshi.
Is it which the arrival of Keshi?
Yes, that is why the eyes remain unblinking.
Ah.
As opposed to that being their regular state of unblinkingness.
Ah, yes, it's specific. Normally they would blink, but they were terrified, and so they're looking here and there with terror in their eyes, not blinking. It is circumstantial. You have something.
I did have clarity. So in that the long list of pastimes that Narada was reciting, one of them was son of the Brahmana. And so initially when you read it I think yesterday or the day before, you noted, is it sons of Brahmana or son of Brahmana? So is it referring to the pastime of the son of Sandipani Muni or the sons of the Brahmana Leda and Dwaraka?
This, your question is following the line of your good wife's question. Some read it this way, some read it that way. The acharyas, some say this and some say that. If we just want what Prabhupada said, then I'll go back and, you know, is it plural or singular?
Singular.
But our acharyas say it can be plural or singular because he did both. Mm-hmm. And the place that the abode is Mahakala. It refers to both. So take it this way, take it that way. Is it singular? So wait a minute. Is the Sanskrit singular or plural? And then the acharyas have to follow what the Sanskrit says. But he did all those things. Even if it's not listed. You can say, etc. How's that?
Maharaj, we got into a little bit of cosmology.
A little bit of?
Cosmology.
Cosmology.
When we look up in the sky, and the modern scientists see so many galaxies.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada mentions that these are not stars, they're, he mentions that the sun, there's only one sun in the universe.
Yeah.
So are all of these things that can be observable considered to be in this universe only? And this, our one sun is illuminating the entire...
This was a topic of discussion amongst, in the GBC conference a couple of years ago. Because the question was raised by Bhadirayan Swami just from a scholarly devotee in the San Diego congregation wanted to know, do you folks literally take it like your question? Is there just one sun and everything else is a reflection? And different people said different things, and the one that made the most sense to me, I can send you the document, if you just remind me to send you the document, the summary of that topic. And the same Antardweep, the TOVP in charge person, said there are different ways of understanding reflection. One is like light and a mirror and reflection of the light in the mirror. And the reflected light is reflected light. And that's one idea. And then another idea of reflection that's more subtle is, he gives the example like channeling or like a Vaidurya Mani. Not Vaidurya Mani. Surya Mani. Is that the right word? Bhaktisiddhanta makes reference to it. Is that it? Surya Mani? It's a stone that receives light of the sun, and it just gives light. I forget the name. Huh? No, not touchstone. Specific. So, the sun receives light directly from the Brahmajyoti. That's the one luminous. But it's receiving it from the Brahmajyoti, and then it's distributing it. And then the other luminaries in the sky receive that light and emit light. But it's light received channeling the light of the sun. That's the luminous planet in this universe. That's how he explained it. That's another, at least it's not like the definitive way, but it's another way of understanding all the galaxies and thises and thats and the other luminaries in the sky. They're exhibiting light. But just like one of the meanings of deva, which refers to the demigods, is effulgent. It's one of the, in Vishnu Sahasranam, it's one of the 1,000 names of Vishnu, and it's effulgent. The devas are effulgent. So where do they derive their effulgence from? Where do they derive anything from? From the personality of Godhead. So those luminaries in the sky are deriving their light from the sun, which derives its light from the Brahmajyoti, which derives its light from Krishna. That's an under, of all the different, there's different possible explanations. But I'll send you the document that gives the different possible ones. And what made the most sense to me is there is, it's literal. There's one luminary, self-effulgent. And the others are reflections in that sense of reflection. Wish I could remember that it's in Brahma Samhita. It's, his purport to the Brahma Samhita verse glorifying the sun as the such and such stone, you can find it. Okay. Online questions?
Atulya Mataji is asking how to understand the plan of Krishna.
Well, if you're Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, you're better, more likely to understand the plan of Krishna or Narada Muni. But you have to become really pure in consciousness. Ask Bhishma Dev. He says you can't. Next.
Amar Mataji asks, material fear is based on the body platform in the sense that there is fear of loss of the on the platform of I and mine.
Yes.
What is the fear of demigods? That's part one. And part two.
Well, let's do one at a time.
Okay.
What's the fear of the demigods? Well, we discussed this yesterday, and they could have fear or no fear, and there's different ways of viewing. Having fear is they also are temporary and they're afraid of losing that which is most dear, their body. And then next most dear is things in connection with the body, mine, their position, their this and that. So fear is the loss of something that's temporary anyways, and illusory anyways, but attachment to the temporary brings fear. And the fearlessness, because that was our discussion yesterday, is, they have a connection with the personality of Godhead, and that's their protection. Their connection is their protection. And thus, fearless, that is, they can go to Lord Vishnu and know that he'll protect. Like a child knowing that their parent in dire circumstance will be there to protect them. Although parents can't ultimately protect because Krishna is the protector. But they have that protection of Krishna consciousness and thus fearlessness. So now, could you read the question again? Because I kind of got lost in the track.
Well, stating the material fear is based on bodily platform.
Yeah.
In the sense that there's a fear of loss on platform of I and mine.
Yeah.
Question one, what is the fear of demigods?
Okay, next.
What is the fear of Vrajavasis, which is transcendental? They fear what? They fear of what and for what?
Well, they think of Krishna as their child or their friend or their beloved, and so they fear for his well-being and safety and happiness. They fear, he may be, and he's walking in his bare feet, and there's sharp stones, and pebbles, and thorns, and he may feel some pain, etc. It's the happiness of Krishna is their fear, or his safety when he's in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, or in the mouth of the Bakka demon. There's fear for him. He's at the center, not there at the center.
Sanchari Mataji asks, what does it mean to truly let go of the bodily conception? I'm thinking of Haridas Thakur, who was a completely pure devotee, but he was still conscious of his body or his birth limitations.
Is still conscious of his body with limitations?
Birth limitations. The fact that he was Muslim.
Oh,
and so he didn't
that's his humility. He wasn't in bodily consciousness.
So question, what does it mean to truly let go of the bodily conception?
It means to truly let go. You embrace the spiritual conception, and only then can you truly let go. The spiritual conception isn't just the body, it's I'm part and parcel of the Supreme, and I have an eternal relation, and then it's true letting go. Next.
That's it, Mark.
Okay. Did you find the reference? Okay. Okay. I'll find it. So I'm going to send you, you just send me a note of what I'm going to send you. And you send me a note of what I'm going to send you. Within the course of their discussion, send me the note on the reference of Yamaraja's abodes, the Tattvasandarbha reference of the Kshanakvadi Buddhism sect, what was the other one? Huh?
Cosmology.
Send me reminders. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki? Jai.